joined. Has joined. Has joined. Has joined.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Martha.
I'm going to wait another minute because I need to finish my breakfast.
Has joined.
Please join me in saying the Anabakoa. Anabakoa, Kedula Chimincha, Tatir, Terura, Alfet Gimel Yudtat Sadi. This connects to the Ahavatinam, unconditional love. Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagvenu Taharenu Nora Kufre Shayan Sintet Nun. These letters spell the words Kras Hatan. Tear up Satan, tear up the negative forces. That can be rearranged to be Sha'ar Katan, small gates, reminding us to guard our gates, the eyes, the ears, the nose, and the mouth. Nagibor Dor Shehudha Ke Vavat Shamre Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin. These letters connect to Parnasa and healing. Barhem Tacharem Rachame Sidkatha Tamid Gamlem Etet Resh Daditaf Gimel. The sequence connects to the Sephirah of Netzach, its essence of eternity, eternal. Hasin Kadosh, Ero Tuvcha, Nael Adaka Ted Kuf Bet Ted Nonayan. The sequence connects to the Sephiroth Hoth and its essence of thankfulness and appreciation. Yahid Gaya Lamcha Pene Zokre Kidushata Yud Gimalamad Pei Zayin Kuf. The sequence connects to the Sephirah Yesod and its essence of foundation, sexuality, creativity, and creation. Ushma Tziyaka Tenu Yodeya Talumot Shinkufav Zadiyata. And this sequence connects to the unconditional love as a path to completion and ultimately perfection. And the eighth verse of the Anna Bekoach, we say in a whisper. We will now do a L'shem Yichud, and followed by the third Aliyah from the Parasha Bereshit. And the third Aliyah consists of 27 verses, starting with Genesis chapter 2, verse 20, and completing with chapter 3, verse 21. L'shem Yehud Udshabar Yehud Shkinte Udhilu Urchimu Udhilu Udhilu Urchimu Liakta L'shem Yudhe Bavavhe Yehuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah Lasok Torah Mitzvah Vayihino Amadonai Eloheinu Elena Maasei Yadenu Koronei Elena Maasei Yadenu Koronei. Chapter 2, verse 20. Vayikra Adam Shemod Lekol HaBehema Ulof HaShemayim Ulkol Hayat HaSadeh Ul Adam Lo Matza Ezer Mechina Egdo VeYapel HaShem Elohim Tardema Al ha'adam vayishan, vayikach achat mitzalotav, vayisgor basar tahtena. Vayiven ha'ashem Elohim et hatzela, asher lakach min ha'adam layisha. Vayavi eha el hadam Vayomer hadam zot hapa'am Etzem be'ata mai uvasar Vivsari lezot yikare isha ki meish leka luchataha zot Al ken yazav ish et aviv et imo v'davak v'ishto v'hayu levas ar echad. V'ayu shenehem arumim hadam v'ishto v'lo yitzvah shashu. V'chanach ha-shayarum Mikol hayat ha-sadeh asher asah Hashem Elohim v'yomer el ha-isha Af ki amar Elohim Lo tochlu mikol et ha-gan V'tomer ha-isha Mi free et agan no kel Kufri Hait Hasher Beto Hagan Amar Elohim Lo Tochlu Mimenu Velo Higu Bo Pentemutun Vayomar Hanahash El Haisha Lo Mot Temutun Ki Yedea Elohim ki biyomachalchem mimenu v'nifkechu enechem. Vayitem kaya Elohim yodei tovara. Vatera ha'isha ki tov ha'etz lema'akal. Veki ha'wahu la'enayim v'nechmad ha'etz l'chashkil v'tikach mimiryo v'atokal v'titen gam le'isha ima v'yokal. Vatipakach na ene shenehem vayedu shiki erumim hem vayitperu ale teena vayasu lahem hagorot vayishmeu et ko Hashem Elohim Mithalech bagan leruach, ayom vayitrabe hadam veishto, mifnei Hashem Elohim betoch et hagan. Vayikra Hashem Elohim el haadam, vayomer lo ye'ayecha. Vayomer et kolot shemati, bagan vaira ki erom anochi v'yachave. Vayomer mihi gad lecha, ki erom ataha min haetz, asher tviticha levilti. Akal mimeni u'akalta. Vayomer ha'adam ha'isha asher metata imdi hu. Natna li min ha'etz vayokel. Vayomer Hashem Elohim la'isha mazot asit. V'tomer ha'isha, ha'nachash ha'shi ani v'yokel. V'yomer Hashem Elohim el ha'nachash, ki asita zot narur ata mikol ha'behema u'mikol ha'yat. Hasade al gehoncha telech v'afar tokol kol yemei chayecha v'yeva ashit v'encha uv'en ha'isha uv'en zaracha uv'ayin zarahu yeshuvcha. Rosh v'yata teshufenu yata kev. El ha'isha amar harba, harba itzponech, v'heronech, v'etzev taldi benim v'el eshan. Ishenech. Yishech tishukatech, v'hu yimshal bach, uladam amar kishamata, לכל אשתך ותאכל מן העץ אשר צוויתיך לאמור לא תאכל ממנו ארורה האדם בעבורך בעצבון תאכלנה כל ימי חייך וחוט ודרדר תצמיח לך ואכלת את הכסף השדה בזיעת אפיך תאכל לחם עד שובשוך אל האדמה כי ממנה לקחת כי עפר אתה ואל עפר תשוב ויקרא האדם שם אשתו הווה כי היא הייתה אם כל חי ויעש השם אלוהים לאדם ואשתו קטנות אור וילבישם. We'll now read the English translation. Verse 20. And the man named all the cattle and the fowl of the heavens, and all the beasts of the field. But for man, he did not find a helpmate opposite him. First question we need to ask is, what is the cattle and fowl of the heavens? Elsewhere in the Zohar, it explains that the fowl of the heavens is a code word for the angels. And it must also apply to the concept of cattle of the heavens. And the beasts of the field, the word is behema. But behema is being used as the is being translated as cattle when it applies to heaven, and beasts of the field when it applies to the lower level of the earth. The last word in the verse is a very famous word, kenegdo, and the word ezer means opposite, or is usually translated as opposite. But each letter of ezer, you have an ayin, which is sight, zion, which is a balance point between the physical and the spiritual. And the resh, which can be either poor, lack, or head. So, and then kenegdo is a very famous word, as I mentioned, because kenegdo stands for a helpmate opposite. It has the energy of being opposed to the man. But it's also translated as helpmate. So how can we be opposite? How can a helpmate be opposite? It needs to be supportive. But that is the nature of the male-female relationship. When the man is doing his spiritual work, his wife supports him. When he's not doing his spiritual work, she stands opposite him and promotes his doing his spiritual work. It's a very difficult word to understand. It's a very difficult aspect of male-female relationships. Verse 21. And Hashem Elohim caused a deep sleep to fall upon man, and he slept. And he took one of his sides, and he closed the flesh in its place. And Hashem Elohim built the side that he had taken from man into a woman, and he brought her to man. And man said, this time it is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. This one shall be called Isha, woman, because this one was taken from an Ish, man. But it's really interesting, the translation this time, or in the Hebrew, it says Zot. My flesh, or flesh from flesh, in the words etem me'atzamai. But you don't see bone of my bones. You see just the word bones, ta'am. I believe that's the translation of ta'am. But it's significant that it says this time in the English translation. Perhaps Zot has the meaning of time as well as this. But it's from this concept, I believe, that the Midrash says that Eve was not the first woman that Adam was involved with. And that's where the Midrash speaks of El, which we don't mention her name. Verse 24. Therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Now they were both naked, the man and his wife, but they were not ashamed. Chapter 3. Now the serpent was cunning more than all the beasts of the field that the Lord, that Hashem Elohim had made. And it said to the woman, did God indeed say, you shall not eat of any of the trees of the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, of all the fruit of the trees of the garden we may eat. But of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the garden, God said, you shall not eat of it, and if you shall not touch it, lest you die. And the serpent said to the woman, you will surely not die. For God knows that on the day that you eat thereof, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like angels, knowing good and evil. And the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes. And the tree was desirable to make one wise. So she took of its fruit, and she ate. And she gave also to her husband with her, and he ate. And the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves, and made themselves girdles. And they heard the voice of the Lord, Hashem Elohim, going in the garden, in the direction of the sun. And the man and his wife hid from before Hashem Elohim in the midst of the trees of the garden. There's in this translation as well. Why do we need to know that Hashem Elohim was going in the direction of the sun? The sun goes from east to west. So why not just say it was going towards the east would be less words. So why does it say in the direction of the sun? Because it's representing what the sun represents, which is Tiferet, the middle of the tree of life. The middle from right to left and the middle from top to bottom. And Hashem Elohim called to man and he said to him, where are you? Ayecha is the word. It's a very powerful word. Ayecha is the first word of Lamentations. But its translation is, where are you? But Hashem Elohim would know where man is. So why does it question, where are you? That's a very famous commentary from many of the sages. And he said, I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I am naked. So I hid. And he said, who told you that you are naked? Have you eaten from the tree which I commanded you not to eat? And the man said, the woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree, so I ate. So Adam is blaming Eve, and Adam is blaming Hashem. Why? Because Hashem gave the woman to him. And she brought him down by telling him to eat. And he ate. He is claiming that he ate only because God gave him the woman. So it's really God's fault. So do we see how manipulative and confusing our logic can be? And Hashem said to the woman, what is this that you have done? And the woman said, the serpent enticed me and I ate. And nobody's accepting responsibility here. And Hashem Elohim said to the serpent, because you have done this, cursed be you more than all the cattle and more than all the beasts of the field. You shall walk on your belly and you shall eat dust all the days of your life. Is that such a horrible curse? Is one of the commentators asked. You crawl on your belly and you eat dust. But dust is everywhere, so you're never hungry. You're never in lack of parnassah, of support, because it's all around you. You don't have to struggle to eat. You just have to crawl around in it. So what kind of curse is that, is the question that gets asked. And here we say you're cursed more than all the cattle. But is that the cattle of heaven or is that the cattle of earth? And all the beasts of the field, you're cursed more than the beast of the field. But what do the beasts of the field have to do with this whole scenario? Never mentioned it in this scenario before. And I shall place hatred between you and between the woman, and between your seed and between her seed. He will crush your head and you will bite his heel. To the woman, he said, I shall surely increase your sorrow in your pregnancy. In pain you shall bear children. And to your husband will you be your desire, and he will rule over you. Is that a permanent rulership? Will that ever end? And to man he said, because you listened to your wife and you ate from the tree for which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it. Cursed be the ground for your sake. With toil shall you eat of it all the days of your life. And it will cause thorns and thistles to grow for you, and you shall eat the herbs of the field. With the sweat of your face you shall eat bread until you return to the ground, for you were taken therefrom. For dust you are, and to dust you will return. And the man named his wife Chava, which is Eve, because she was the mother of all life. And the Lord Hashem Elohim made for Adam and his wife shirts of skin, and he dressed them. A lot of questions. Even when you read it closely, I didn't go into much of the Hebrew. But lots of questions. It's a very difficult story to unpack, to try and understand. Today is the 25th day of Tishrei, and the tzaddik, one of the tzaddikim that passed this day, is Rabbi Levi Yitzhak of Berdichev. On the day that the Berdichever was born, the Baal Shem Tov conducted a fabregat, a group study, conducted this Farbregen with great joy, during which he told his disciples that the soul of one who would be the spiritual defender of the Jewish people has just entered the world. In this respect, Rabbi Levi Yitzhak's birth is similar to the Alter Rebbe, the founder of the Chabad, because Baal Shem Tov also made a Fabregen on his birthday. There were three guarantees, according to the teachings, about Rabbi Levi Yitzhak. First off, he would never be called a Rebbe while he was alive. But these promises are made to the Satan, because the Satan would not allow Rabbi Levi's soul to come into the world. If he were born, he would no longer be able to succeed in his mission of promoting evil. In return for his consent to letting the Berdichever's soul come into the world, the Satan received three guarantees. He would not be called a Rebbe, together with the name of his city. So he's known as the Berdichev or Rebbe, which would be the normal customary way to refer to a tzaddik. But only the Berdichev or Rove. He would not, he was a rabbi of Berdichev. He was not the Rebbe of Berdichev. That he would be persecuted throughout his life, far more than any of the other students of the Baal Shem Tov. And that he would never meet the Baal Shem Tov, even though he was 20 when the Baal Shem Tov passed away. So it was possible for him to meet. But he was never allowed to meet the Baal Shem Tov, just to study his words. Rabbi Levi Yitzhak was born in the year 5500, which corresponds to the beginning of the daylight of the sixth millennium of creation. And this was the time that the redemption truly began to shine. How could it, 5500, be the beginning of the day? And it's when we understand that the sixth millennium is 1,000 years long. And the first half, 500 years, is darkness, because the day starts in the evening. A story regarding Rabbi Levi Yitzhak. Packed to the rafters. The whole town had gathered as one for the annual Simchat Torah celebration. Only moments to go and the stirring sounds of the ancient Atah Haresa prayer would ring forth throughout the synagogue. People looked at each other in nervous anticipation, for among all those assembled, who would be chosen to lead the community in prayer? Years before, he had won worldwide fame as the Rabbi of Berdichev. The young Rabbi Levi Yitzhak was widely respected for his erudition and his unique path to spirituality. He was treasured for his dedication to others and his commitment to godliness. Unfortunately, one of the only people not fully enamored of the youthful prodigy was his own father-in-law. Undeterred by convention and determined to follow his own path in Judaism, Levi Yitzhak had only just returned to town after months spent exploring the nascent Hasidic movement, meeting its leaders and committing to the Hasidic way of life. His father-in-law was livid. He mistrusted these revolutionary ideas and newfangled methods of serving Hashem. And he worried about his son-in-law's prospects. Was this the end of all his hopes for his beloved daughter? The other townsfolk were more forgiving of Levi Yitzhak's impetuosity and his fervor. As proof of their regard, they selected him to recite the Atah Haresa, the prayer leading off the Simchat Torah service. Levi the central column in a state of constrained ecstasy and picked up the talit, the prayer shawl, preparatory to commencing the ritual. However, to the bemusement of the assembled crowd, he paused for a moment of contemplation and then placed the talit back in its place. After a short while, he again picked up the prayer shawl, only to once again replace it on the lectern. When he picked up the talit for the third time, an uneasy murmur filled the synagogue. The young rabbi seemed to be fighting a silent battle with an unseen opponent, finally, in a dramatic denouement, Levi Yitzhak placed the tallit firmly back in its place and announced, if you're a chassid and a scholar, then you lead the prayers, and stalked back to his seat near the side wall of the synagogue. His father-in-law was mortified. Bad enough that the young man insisted on adopting the Hasidic lifestyle with its attendant new custom. But did he have to disgrace himself with public exhibitionism as well? When asked for a justification of his unusual behavior, Levi Yitzhak explained that as he had approached the podium, he had suddenly realized that he was not alone. His Yetzer Hara, his evil inclination, wished to accompany him in prayer. You don't belong here, he challenged the tempter. I have been selected to represent the community because I am a scholar. What legitimacy do you have? If you are a scholar, then I'm a scholar too, the evil one replied. Wherever you studied, whichever yeshivas you attended, I was right there with you. But I am a chassid, Levi Yitzhak counterclaimed. I have just returned from the Rebbe's court, where I learned to pray as a Jew should, and devote myself to godliness. I too am a chassid. When you traveled to the Rebbe, I accompanied you. When you were initiated in the ways of faith, I came along for the ride. I have every right to join you in prayer tonight and keep you company under that tallit. I could not win, Rabbi Let Yitzhak confessed. He was right. I admitted to myself that I had been living a lie. He and I were partners in crime. The ties that bound me to evil were as strong as they were when I first began my journey of faith. I was almost ready to concede in despair when I was seized by one last inspiration. With my remaining strength, I turned on my tormentor and cried, if you are a chassid and a scholar as you claim, then you lead the prayers and leave me out of the foul plots. And then I ran from the stage. What does all this mean? I first heard this story as a child and have always been fascinated by it. Yet it occurred to me recently that I had no real understanding of the deeper meaning behind the whole bizarre episode. Upon reflection, I would suggest that Rabbi Levi Yitzhak was making a fundamental argument about man's attempt at self-improvement. We go through the motions. We try to change ourselves for the better. Yet how many can claim to have truly reformed? The sad reality is that we bring all of our peccadilloes and character flaws along with us on our journey through life. It is not enough to meander along the sterile paths of ascetic existence, waiting and hoping to spontaneously combust. We've got to practice shock therapy, either bodily throwing away our ego and evil, or fleeing in a totally new direction, leaving the old us. But Yom Kippur is now just a memory. We gathered in synagogues and cried and prayed to Hashem. I promised to change, to become a new person, inspired by a new purpose. But I'm still the same facile fraud that I always was. Simchat Torah is my hope for self-transformation. The high holidays were all about prayer and performance. Simchat Torah is our chance for passion and purpose. We may have spent the hours of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur praying, but are we sure that our inclination towards evil wasn't with us all along, underneath our talit? On Simchat Torah, we close our minds and open up our hearts. We dance till we drop and allow the spirit of the day to permeate our souls. We refuse to allow even a thin veneer of sham, spiritually, to distract us from our journey towards God. Unconcerned by public opinion, dedicated to nothing but the truth, on Simchat Torah, we let our inner Jew hang out and proudly proclaim that nothing in our exile life exists other than our union with Hashem. May you all have a beautiful day. Are there any questions?
Yes.
Have a question?
Yes, I do. Good morning. In Genesis, when it says that she would be called the mother of all living, that was just because he's looking that she was going to be, or has she already been? And because the text doesn't show, is there a Targum or the... where can I go to get more information, like other opinions on that verse?
You can read comments on that verse in many different places. Just type in the verse, chapter and verse in Google, and you'll get comments from many different sources.
Okay, so maybe just stick with Kavod then.
I'm sorry?
And then pretty much stay with Kavod, or would I have the Talmud that would come up more than likely?
The Chabad is just one of the voices. There are many, many voices over the centuries that have the same similar question. The Talmud has many, many. If you read the Talmud, you can, if you choose to see, you can see that this answer, the question is asked, and then the sage will give an answer. But 100 years later, another sage will give a different answer. And 100 years after that, there'll be another sage give a third answer. This is the way to read the Talmud, is to understand who is the sage that is speaking, and what is his opinion, his agenda? What is his life purpose? Which mitzvah was his connection to Hashem? We all have to do all 613 mitzvot, but we have one mitzvah that is ours, that draws us closer to Hashem. And if you don't know the person who's drafting that answer, you're going to make a mistake of not understanding the agenda of the writer. And you cannot find truth until you understand the agenda of the writer. So the more you learn about who's answering in the Talmud, who's answering, even which of the rabbis is speaking in the Zohar, because each, there are 10 rabbis that Rabbi Shimon was associated with, including himself. There were 9 others. And each one of them connects to a different Sefirah. And if you don't know which Sefirah they're speaking from, you don't understand their agenda and what they're trying to teach us. But I'd like to look at which verse was it that you were asking about? where you
Genesis
said it.
Genesis 3:20. And Adam called his wife Hava because she was the mother of all living. Well, according, she hadn't had any children yet. Was it just a symbolic gesture?
There's a premise in the Torah, and we would have to be able to speak Hebrew well enough to know, is it saying it in the present time he's calling her, or was this past tense that she'd had the two boys? I think you'll find that answer in the Book of Jubilees, which you can find online in an English translation. So I think you'll find that answer there. But the other aspect is that you need to realize there is no time in the Torah. There is no past, there is no future, there is no present. They are all one. So we, since the Torah speaks in the language of man, we have tenses. We have past, we have future, we have the present. But the Torah does not have that. It's all unified. So when Adam is saying that she is the mother of all life, he is perceiving the future.
Okay.
But he's also recognizing the past. Because Adam is not truly the first man. We know that there were 994 generations before Adam. Does that mean? I highly recommend you study a book by Rabbi Bar Sadok, which I hope to start teaching at some point. But that book is describing the generations prior to Adam. It's describing the first 7,000-year period and explaining that the word Bereshit, one of the explanations of the reason why it starts with a bet, is to tell us that it's the second of seven 7,000-year periods. And Adam is seeing the past as well as the future. But it's very hard to grasp the present, because as soon as you grasp it, it's gone. And it has become your past.
Okay, yeah.
The Torah has no time. So even the first two verses of Genesis, the first verse is really the second verse. Because the Tohu Vavohu, those worlds were before the creation of heaven and earth.
Mm-hmm.
Represents the creation of the Tikkun, the Olam Tikkun, our present world. The Tohu Vavohu was prior to that. It was the cause of the need for the Tikkun. In the Torah. And when you're looking for past or future, you're misunderstanding the teachings of the Torah.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
Very good. Point taken.
Are there any other questions?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
My question is that Adam had a wife or a mate, let's just put it a mate, prior to Ish, the woman, and or Hannah. So was that mate his before the female and male were separated? And that was his wife because he couldn't find a mate? That he felt was his his other half through the animals that he was naming. So is that when the first mate came into existence for Adam? And it was from the animal world, being that on the evil inclination.
His first mate was LL. His first mate was, while he was talking to the Nahash, to the snake, to the negative system, Adam was cavorting with the negative system, with LL. And the Midrash says that they couldn't agree as to who should be on top in their unification. And she refused to be underneath him. So she stomped off. She left him. And she found her mate in the negative system. And so she is considered the female aspect of Satan. But she is not a mate. But Hashem, in essence, said, you have a mate. Your mate is Shabbat. Shabbat fulfills you. And he said, I'm physical, or I will be physical. I need a physical mate, not an ethereal mate, an energy of Shabbat. So Hashem then put him to sleep and took from within him the essence of Chava and built her up. There's a lot of different understandings of that language and those words.
So we're talking about the energy of the negative system was actually referencing the LL with Adam. Is that correct? It's not a physical, spiritual essence.
Yes, but as we said on Monday, the language is really unclear because it says he was created and put into the Garden of Eden, and then he is created and taken out of the Garden of Eden, put into the physical world, and created from dust. It's discussing and describing different creations that are all man, that are all connected to being Adam. And it's why it's very confusing and why it leads to all these different midrashim.
Okay, my next question is, you said that the 7,000 millennium, that the bet was placed for that 7,000 millennium. So the next 7,000 years, is that going to be another Hebrew letter that starts the new 7,000 generation? And what was it prior to the bet? I know we have the Alpha. We have the bet in the alphabet, the Hebrew alphabet. So is there going to be another alphabet to start the next 7,000 generation?
Well, there are three alphabets that we know about.
I'm sorry, repeat that?
There are three alphabets that we know about. There is the alphabet that's in the world Olam Haba. They're the large letters in the Torah. There are the small letters in the Torah, that represent the alphabet of the level of Malchut. The alphabet that's most of the letters in the Torah are the alphabet of Zerantin. There were 7,000 years prior to the creation of Adam. And in those 7,000 years, there were 974 generations.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was a 1,000 years of desolation where the earth renewed itself. There was a creation of Adam in the second of the 7,000 year period. And how many generations will there be? You have to define what's the length of a generation. Different generations that we belong to based on the year of our birth. And each of those generations that we belong to have a tikkun, and we share in that tikkun. And all of this is coming from the writings of the Ari, and there are people who disagree with it. But the Ari said there was supposed to be 7,000 year period representing the Jubilee, the 50-year cycle. The 50th year, 7 times 7,000 is 49,000, followed by the Jubilee. But the Ari was of the opinion that this was the last. There was no need for the other five. Others disagree with him and say there is need for the other five. And they will represent different aspects of the final, of the tikkun, of the correction. But ultimately, when all 7,000 have been done, or when these two have been completed, we will all return to the endless world with one difference. We will no longer have the illusionary feeling of bread of shame.
So my next question would be the final five Hebrew letters that we don't know of what that may be, or the final, is that the endless world that you speak of?
Okay, what was the last sentence?
Is that the endless world that you speak of when we get the final Hebrew letters? Whatever that may be.
I haven't read anything that said that there would be a final alphabet. My intuition says there's going to be an alphabet for all of the different 7,000 year periods. And
okay.
There may be less letters. There's a reason why certain languages have more than 27 letters. The language Farsi has 32, as an example. Are there sounds that are made that are not available in the Hebrew language, in the Hebrew alphabet? The answer is yes. So, but I have not read from anywhere that there will be a different alphabet, only that there will be a different letter, the 23rd letter, will be revealed by the Mashiach. But is it talking about the Mashiach of this 7,000 year period, or is it talking about the Mashiach of this a of the seventh 7,000-year period. We do not know. And there's disagreements among the sages. That's what's called a machloket, an argument for the search of truth. And I'm sorry, I can't give you a definitive answer, but that's one of the gifts of studying Kabbalah. You get confused, and out of the confusion, you will find clarity. But the process will lead you through a maze of confusion. And it gets you comfortable with confusion. But it's difficult to become comfortable with confusion, as it should be. Because it keeps motivating you to search for truth. I hope you get some clarity of what I've just said in answer to your question. Are there any other questions? You all have a beautiful day. Shalom Gadol.
Thank you.
Shalom.
Shalom, thank you.
Shalom, thank you. Thank you.